From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Jimi Hendrix was the man with the guitar, Paganini the violin. Earl Scruggs was the banjo, bluegrass banjo, personified from Grand Ole Opry to Bill Monroe's Bluegrass Boys and Foggy Mountain Days and much more. Earl Scruggs gave the banjo a whole new voice and a place in American music. Before Earl Scruggs, nobody played banjo like him, it's been said. After Scruggs came on the scene, everybody did. He died yesterday in Nashville at 88. This hour on Point, the life and music, the ballad of Earl Scruggs. You can join the conversation, What Made the Magic? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we'll talk with Scruggs' friend and banjo legend Tony Trischka, along with 2011 Banjo Player of the Year Ron Stewart. The first with us right now from Nashville, Tennessee, is Peter Cooper, senior music writer for the Tennessean, senior lecturer in country music at Vanderbilt University's Blair School of Music. He's also a Grammy-nominated singer, songwriter, and producer, has picked with Earl Scruggs and worked with Emmylou Harris, Nancy Griffith, Ricky Skaggs, Kenny Chesney, and more. Peter Cooper, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here. I wish it wasn't on this occasion.
We do, too, and we never want to lose that great sound behind us right there. Peter, take us to the technical innovation that Earl Scruggs made, just kind of the law of the land in banjo playing. And we can hear it right there.
Yeah, the banjo was it sounded differently before Earl came along, and he developed this three-fingered style of playing that allowed him to augment the melody with these kind of rocket ride notes, and allowed it to become an instrument of some sophistication. He came on the Opry, joined Bill Monroe's Bluegrass Band in 1945 in December of that year, and the sound that he brought with his unique style of playing really cemented and some would say created what we now call bluegrass music.
Foggy Mountain Breakdown behind us, that was 1949, a little bit later, but just absolutely one of his hallmark sounds and songs, and of course with Lester Flatt right there on guitar.
Yes, yes. He and Lester were both members of the Bluegrass Boys, and then they went off on their own and formed what was, at least until Alison Krauss and Union Station came along, was the most commercially impactful bluegrass band ever. Flatt and Scruggs was a force in music, and of course was brought into everybody's living rooms via the Beverly Hillbillies.
They had the theme for the Beverly Hillbillies. We'll hear a little bit about that. That was a big break for them. Remind us, Peter, what the banjo was before Earl Scruggs made his style of play the style of play. I mean, it really had a different function.
Yes, it was frailed. A lot of times it was sometimes used as a comedy prop on stage. Somebody would have overalls on and be twirling it around, something like that. Now, there were some great banjo players that came before Earl, and actually sometimes when I was in Earl's house, I would see he had a big collection of Uncle Dave Macon records. So it's not that that we're to scoff at everything that came before,
but he
just found an entirely new way to play it. It was like it had been just kind of taxiing on the runway, and Earl just said, "Hey, let's lift this thing off," and allowed it a completely a different impact. And so he just looked at the thing and figured out a whole other angle on it, and that allowed it to become a much more useful instrument in lots of different kinds of music. And so later on, when he would play with, say, Elton John or Sting, one of his favorite things to talk about was the time he jammed with sax player King Curtis. And the way that Earl played allowed that to happen, and it also allowed other folks to innovate from there. I believe Tony Trischka is going to be on the show later,
and
he's a guy who, along with Bobby Thompson, really developed this chromatic way of playing that really pleased Earl. Sometimes when people are innovators and create something, they would like that thing to stay that way, and they zealously guard that. Bill Monroe was that way in some ways with bluegrass. He didn't always appreciate other people adding on to it and expanding. And Earl was tickled by the folks who came before him, and he was delighted by people like Tony Trischka and Bela Fleck, who recently did a symphony for banjo.
Yeah.
He took great delight in that. He wanted the music to evolve.
We'll talk about Earl Scruggs' origins and coming up. Here's a little sound of him with the Bluegrass Boys. This was with bandleader Bill Monroe. Talk about bluegrass coming off the ground here. Father of bluegrass, Bill Monroe. Earl Scruggs became, well, he's one of the famous bluegrass boys. Brought his banjo out to the front of the stage with this 1947 finger-picking frenzy bluegrass breakdown.
Oh, yeah.
Peter Cooper is senior music writer for the Tennessean, joins us from Nashville. Remind us of how Earl Scruggs came up, where he came from, and how he came on the scene with Bill Monroe, Peter.
Yeah, I was just driving through there over this past weekend, as a matter of fact, and he came from a place that was fairly near Shelby, North Carolina, which is kind of near Gaffney, South Carolina, which is kind of near Spartanburg, which is kind of near Greenville. He was a kid in the country, and he had a difficult childhood. Was lonely a lot, and used that lonesome time to play the banjo. He would listen on the radio to WSPA in Spartanburg, South Carolina. He would sometimes listen to a guy named Don Reno playing banjo, who was working on a you might say a similar style, and Earl would just sit and be by himself and work on that. He was working in the Lilly Thread Mill. That was his job as a teenager, and he felt like that was probably his lot for the rest of his life. But he noticed that sometimes on breaks he would go out with a guy named Grady Wilkie. Grady would play guitar and Earl would play the banjo, and everyone would gather around them on the breaks at this thread mill and just delight in what Earl was doing. He said one guy actually took his hat off and threw it on the ground and stomped on it. He got so excited after hearing Earl play the banjo that way. And he said that's when he knew he was doing something that was of interest to people.
Well, and many did for many years. I mean, it was a way of using the banjo that just made you get up out of your chair. It was thrilling.
Yes, it was. It was like the greatest party trick you could possibly have. And when Earl started playing folk festivals, you know, he played Newport Folk Festival in 59 before Lester would even go up there with him. Mm-hmm. And people's jaws dropped. They just went crazy for this. And that allowed the banjo to become a substantive part of the folk boom. And the people that were playing banjo, like Pete Seeger, saw Earl play and said, oh, that's a whole nother way at this thing. That is absolutely thrilling.
Well, this is an interesting thing about Earl Scruggs. As someone from that background and from that musical world, you're right, and it's true. He had an amazing kind of adaptability musically and open-mindedness culturally. He played with all kinds of people in all kinds of settings. He didn't stay just in country. You say there's no way his legacy is limited to or defined even by bluegrass, as big and wonderful as that is.
No.
Politically, culturally, musically, this was a wide-open man.
He was an absolute example of how to look at the world with wide eyes and an open mind, and he never he raised the way he was. He certainly could have gone along a path that a lot of people did, and he found a new path. He wanted, at a time in Nashville when people like Bob Dylan and Joan Baez were being scorned by a lot of folks here, sometimes the difference between folk music and country music was just what you thought about the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
He loved Baez. He said she had one of the best voices I've ever heard. Of course I wanted to play with her. He loved Bob Dylan, and they would sit at parties together and listen to music and play music. In fact, he and his wife, Louise, who's an important part of this story, too, she was the first female manager in Nashville. She became enamored of Bob Dylan, and they were on Columbia, on Dylan's label, and so it probably they had the Bob Dylan's first record before anyone in Nashville did, and each record before it would come out, it would appear at the Scruggs household. And Flatt and Scruggs even recorded a number of Bob Dylan songs.
You write, during the long hair, short hair skirmishes of the 60s and 70s, Earl Scruggs simply showed up and played with Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, The Byrds. You write, Scruggs happily jammed away with sax player King Curtis, sitar virtuoso Ravi Shankar, piano man Elton John, and anyone else whose music he fancied. You quote his friend and acolyte Marty Stewart saying, 10 or 12 years ago, he was the man who melted walls, and he did it without saying three words. Of course, when you can play banjo like that, you don't have to talk that much.
You don't, and he would say a few words, but they were always well considered. And the thing about melting walls that Marty Stewart said to me, that's really true, and he opened his home to people, and there was no distance between him and a banjo player who showed up at a festival and wanted to pick, or Ravi Shankar knocking on his door. One thing about him that I'm noticing today on Facebook, I'm seeing so many pictures of people with Earl, musicians, fans, you name it. He was the most accessible of musical superheroes, and the festival culture in bluegrass made that possible too. But there's 10,000 people who played the banjo with Earl Scruggs.
Peter Cooper, please stand by in Nashville, Tennessee. Music writer for the Tennessean newspaper, banjo hero Earl Scruggs has died yesterday in Nashville at 88. Today we're looking back at his life and music, celebrating this great musician. You can join us. What was the magic? 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
She just ain't what she used to be, just a little high-headed, that's plain to see. Don't get above your razor.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about banjo hero Earl Scruggs, bluegrass pioneer, three-finger picker, a musical giant who died yesterday in Nashville at 88 with a tremendous musical legacy behind him. Behind us right here, Earl Scruggs, Lester Flatt, and the Foggy Mountain Boys with Don't Get Above Your Raisin. As folk music saw its surge in the 50s and 60s, a song like this one continued to put Flatt and Scruggs way up in public consciousness. Died yesterday at 88, and what a legacy he left. We're going to hear in this hour from the great banjo player Tony Trischka, with us from New York, but with us right now from Nashville, Tennessee, is Peter Cooper, senior writer for the Tennessean newspaper. You can link to his terrific obituary on Earl Scruggs at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm going to go right to our listeners, Peter. So many calling in. Mike in Madison, Connecticut. You're on the air, Mike.
Yes. Hi, Tom. I have a great story. I've been enthralled with Earl Scruggs playing since I was 16 years old, and I'm now 58. But I started with Bonnie and Clyde, of course, when I heard Foggy Mountain Breakdown. I just couldn't get over the sound of the banjo. So I went out and I bought a banjo, knowing nothing about it, five-string, and the instruction book. And when I was in college, I was having trouble with the tablature. So I found a phone number on the back of the book, and I called it. Sure enough, Earl Scruggs answered the phone.
Get out.
And he was actually very, very touched that I called him, very kind. And
you asked him how to play Foggy Mountain Breakdown? Is that what you
yeah,
did?
Yeah, I wanted to learn how to play Foggy Mountain Breakdown. I was having trouble with the tablature in the book.
Yeah.
So Earl talked me through a little bit of it and told me where he was going to be performing. This is probably 1974.
Yeah.
And he was going to be performing in Syracuse. I was going to Cobleskill at the time, Syracuse, New York, with his sons. And I was absolutely on top of the world after that phone call, and I couldn't believe I just talked to the legend Earl Scruggs, you know?
And he was huge by 1974.
I waited for the phone bill to come to prove that I actually talked to him and my friends, and there was nothing on the phone bill. And the end of the story is that Earl paid for the call. He reversed the charges.
Oh, my goodness.
That is a great story. You called the number, Earl Scruggs answered, walked you through Foggy Mountain Breakdown, and reversed the charges. That's one for the ages.
In 1974, by which time Earl was easily the biggest banjo player in the world and you know, one of the best-known instrumentalists anywhere.
Anywhere. That says volumes. Mike, thank you so much for that story. One more, Rick in Hinesburg, Vermont. Rick, you're on the air.
No, it's such a sad day for many of us banjo players. I think it sort of marks a little bit of a end of an era of some of the real old-time pioneers. And it really made me think about that first time that I heard Foggy Mountain Breakdown in the Bonnie and Clyde film,
mm-hmm.
and how that sound was so so striking and strong that it stuck in the back of my mind that when I was a young kid, I was carrying equipment for a rock and roll band saying there must be a better way. And it was that song that filtered through my mind. I kept hearing it over and over again, not that I was listening to a record or anything, but it just stuck there until I went down and started learning how to play the banjo.
And this was really big for Earl Scruggs when it was in Bonnie and Clyde. It was kind of the escape music there, and people once again just really glommed onto it. What was your response, Rick, when you heard of his death yesterday? He had a good long life at 88. Even so,
well, to be honest, I cried.
Wow.
I felt so bad. Even though he had a long life and everything, I felt it was a great loss for our musical community that he passed away.
Rick, I appreciate your call as well. I think a lot of people will share that sentiment. Peter Cooper, stand by in Nashville. We are delighted right now to have with us from New York, as we look back on the life and music of the great Earl Scruggs, Mr. Tony Trischka, International Bluegrass Music Awards winner of the Album of the Year, Recorded Event of the Year, Banjo Player of the Year. He's picked with the Bella Fleck and Steve Martin on Double Banjo, Bluegrass Speculator, along with Earl Scruggs. Tony Trischka, it's an honor to have you with us on this day. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate it.
Your thoughts on the passing of Earl?
So many thoughts. It's hard to just pick one, but as everyone's saying, it's a huge loss, not just to bluegrass music, but to music in general. As Peter was pointing out, he jammed with Ravi Shankar and Bob Dylan and, of course, Lester Flatt and Bill Monroe and just all sorts of – he was, again, very wide open and it's just a tremendous loss. And, you know, just for me on a personal level, my life would have been completely different. I'd probably be selling shoes or something if it hadn't been for Earl Scruggs. I wouldn't be married to the woman I'm married to, have the kids I have. I wouldn't be living close to New York City. I mean, every aspect of my life, and not just me, many, many people's lives would have been completely different if it weren't for this shy gentleman from, you know, South Central North Carolina.
Mr. Trischka, I think you have your banjo with you there today in New York, and I wonder if you'd be good enough to kind of demonstrate for us what banjo more or less was before Earl Scruggs and his technique came to dominance, and then what he brought to it. We'll move on to your chromatic way, but can you kind of show us that, you know, before and after Earl sound?
Well, let's see. There are a number of before and afters. One of the sounds that you can have is a little bit of what's called clawhammer or frailing style, which sounds something like this.
That's clawhammer or frailing, you say.
Right. It's a downstroke style mm-hmm. that's coming from an African point of view, African origins, which is where mm-hmm. the banjo comes from originally anyway. Mm-hmm. And then the return of the century styles, the late 1800s, early 1900s, sounded a little bit like this. Something like
very
that.
Sweet,
very
smooth.
Quaint style,
mm-hmm,
sweet
mm-hmm.
style.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were two finger styles that basically, and that's how Earl started, was playing a two finger style of a tune called Reuben. And he was, you know, I'm not sure exactly what age, 8 years old, 9 years old, and he was sort of absentmindedly playing with a two finger style. And then suddenly the middle finger got in there, the third finger, and smoothed everything out and gave a whole different sound.
Can you demonstrate that for us a bit?
Yeah, it's first tune he played. Mm-hmm. In the Three Finger style was a tune called Reuben. And I'll do it in the Two Finger style and then the Three Finger style. Mm-hmm. And then the Three Finger. So it was just an accidental mm-hmm. thing on his part. There were a couple of guys, Smith Hammett and Rex Brooks, who grew mm-hmm. up in his town. Mm-hmm. While he was growing up, he heard them. And they were playing in a three-finger style, but he wasn't influenced by them. He just heard their banjo playing. And his father played banjo as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he just developed this thing. And
the syncopation is what people talk about, is giving it that energy, that sort of irresistible bite.
Exactly. He was treating the banjo almost as a drum in some ways. Because when I talked to him, mm-hmm. what he said was what he felt like he brought to the banjo was syncopation. Of course, he brought many other things as well. But for those listeners who, you know, don't know a whole lot about music theory, syncopation is where you take the emphasis instead of having everything on the on beat, just mm-hmm. where it's right on the downbeat, mm-hmm. it could be a little before or a little afterwards. Mm-hmm. And so instead of everything being right on the beat, Earl mm-hmm. might go or licks yeah, like this.
Right.
Which is just ultra exciting.
It brings that torque to it, and pretty soon you're just swept straight up. And here's a little sound from the man himself, Earl Scruggs. This is with Lester Flatt and the Foggy Mountain Boys, 1955, after he had broken with Bill Monroe. This is 'Tis Sweet to Be Remembered. Everett Lilly singing there, and Earl Scruggs right there on the banjo. Peter Cooper's with us from the Tennessean. The great banjo player Tony Trischka's with us as we remember Earl Scruggs today. Let me go to Bruce in Berlin, Connecticut. Bruce, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom and gentlemen. One thing I just wanted to mention that I hadn't heard that on the program was that in the early 20th century, the banjo was a basic rhythm instrument in most orchestras. It was used in the Paul Whiteman Orchestra. You can hear it on the early electric recordings. And it was always a straight rhythm instrument, the same way the guitar was used mm-hmm. as a rhythm instrument before it became a soloistic instrument in the 50s. You could say that Earl Scruggs did for the banjo what Charlie Parker did for the saxophone. They both reinvented the instruments.
That's right.
To give them a whole new voice.
Brought them out front.
Pardon me?
Brought them out front. They used to say, the announcer at the Grand Ole Opry, and Peter, you remind us of this, that Earl Scruggs was the boy who made the banjo talk, Peter.
That's right. That's right. He certainly gave it a new eloquence. He took it to a whole other place. And I think it's interesting as folks are calling in, a lot of them giving personal remembrances, and I think maybe Tony can speak to this, that what he did with the banjo was really invent this wonderful magic trick and then showed everybody how it was done. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter whether that was a, you know, struggling young comic named Steve Martin,
right, banjo
or
player,
or it was an accomplished, you know, instrumental virtuoso like Tony Trischka. He mm-hmm. was so open with his gifts because he was open as a person.
Let's go to Owensboro, Kentucky, and Amy. Amy, thanks for calling. You're on the air. Hello, Amy, are you there?
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air, Amy.
Yes, I was just wanting to call, give my regards, let you know that here in Owensboro, we're going to be welcoming time to romp because we have the International Bluegrass Museum.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I was little, littler than I am now, kind of young, I saw a Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah,
and that
sure.
really opened my eyes to bluegrass. Ever since then, I've made quite a few friends. My friend Matthew Johnson, he's just now taking banjo lessons, and he comes over to the house and plays, and it's just beautiful music. I love hearing it.
It surely is. It surely is, Amy, and good luck with your festival there. You know, Peter, I know we've got to lose you in just a second. I wanted to ask about, first of all, the relationship between Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, and then how they thought about their fame as it unfolded. You write about how it was their music that became the theme for what was a huge TV show back in the early 60s, the Beverly Hillbillies, and they went into that with a lot of trepidation because the whole idea of this being presented as about hillbillies was unsettling to them.
Yes, in particular, Louise Scruggs, who was
calling
a lot of the shots.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "Well, I, you know, when I was growing up, hillbilly was thought of as a demeaning term. I don't think we want to contribute." And the CBS folks, I mean, this is before cable and satellites and all that. There's just kind of three channels. This was a big deal to be offered a chance for this music to get on national TV, and the CBS folks were like, "What do you mean you won't do it?" And I don't like the term hillbillies. And they had to fly the film to Nashville of the pilot episode and arrange for a private showing before Louise would agree to have Earl and Lester on the Beverly Hillbillies.
Story.
But it brought their music into everyone's listening room. And people like Bela Fleck, he was a kid in the Northeast, and he didn't know anything about the banjo. He heard the Beverly Hillbillies theme and just went bonkers. How can I make that sound?
And off it went. And him and a lot of the country were talking about the great life and music of Earl Scruggs. And here's that theme from the Beverly Hillbillies, The Ballad of Jed Clampett, Lester Flatt, and Earl Scruggs.
I've been listening to my story about a man named Jed. Poor mountaineer, barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up through the ground come a bubbling crude. Oil, that is, black gold, Texas tea.
Jerry Scoggins is singing out front there over Earl Scruggs and Lester Flatt, The Ballad of Jed Clampett. Wow, Tony Trischka, corny, campy, but it put that banjo in front of the whole country.
It sure did, and Peter's right about Louise Scruggs' influence, because I spoke to her about this very tune, and she said that as soon as the show hit, that song was so popular that, and there was no record of it, you couldn't buy a single of it, and so she called Columbia Records and said, "Hey, let's put this out as a single." And went, "Oh, that's a good idea." And within a week, it went to number one on the charts. Not just the country charts, but the charts in general.
It's amazing. Peter Cooper, we've just got you for one more minute here. Then we'll have Tony play with us some more. But remind us, in the 60s and 70s, how Earl Scruggs, I mean, he played with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band on Will the Circle Be Unbroken.
He inspired Will the Circle Be Unbroken.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You mentioned the kind of long hair, short hair divide earlier, and he was having none of that. And after Flatt and Scruggs, he and his long-haired sons formed the Earl Scruggs Review, and they were country rock forerunners. They were an inspiration to the Dirt Band to bring veteran musicians and younger musicians together, regardless of politics or upbringing. And Earl continued to stretch out. He did a wonderful duo album with Tom T. Hall.
Mm-hmm.
He continued to record with people of all musical stripes, and he was just this model of innovation and creativity throughout his life.
He was there in 1969 at the Moratorium to end the war in Vietnam, one of the very few bluegrass country western artists to support the anti-war movement.
That's right, and according to Marty Stewart, Lester saw him on TV supporting the anti-war movement and said, "Oh, Earl, look now, Earl's a communist."
Uh-oh, there we go. Peter Cooper, I know we have to lose you. I'm sorry for it, but we're so grateful to you for helping us look back on this great musical life today. Thank you so much for joining us, Peter.
Thanks for having me. He was a wonderful man.
He was indeed. Peter Cooper, senior writer for the Tennessean newspaper in music. Tony Trischka, it is great to have you. Please stand by. The Flint Hill special behind us right here. Earl Scruggs and the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. Listeners, you can join us, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook, remembering Earl Scruggs. This is On Point. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about banjo hero, giant, Earl Scruggs, bluegrass pioneer, three-finger picker, true music legend, died yesterday in Nashville at 88 after just a tremendous and super influential career in music and in the American culture. Behind us right here, I Saw the Light 1972. It's the Earl Scruggs Review, and it's I Saw the Light with a Little Help from My Friends album. And Linda Ronstadt, Arlo Guthrie, Gary Scruggs, Tracy Nelson, a whole lot of people there, and that banjo, that unmistakable banjo, right in the middle of it. You can join the conversation this hour at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. What's your Earl Scruggs story? What made the magic in his music? The great banjo player Tony Trischka is with us today from New York, International Bluegrass Music Award winner, Album of the Year, Recorded Event of the Year, Banjo Player of the Year. All that, he's picked with Earl Scruggs and many more. Did it on his Double Banjo Bluegrass Spectacular 2007 album. Steve Martin both plays the banjo, of course, and is quite a writer on his own. Look back on when Earl Scruggs came to the Grand Ole Opry. He wrote about it in the New Yorker, says there aren't many earthquakes in Tennessee, but that night there was. Where Earl Scruggs came with that banjo, things really got shaken up. Tony Trischka is in New York with us right now as well from Russell Springs, Kentucky. 2011 International Bluegrass Music Awards Banjo Player of the Year. Plays banjo and fiddle for the Boxcars. Ron Stewart joins us. Mr. Stewart, thank you very much for being here.
Oh, hi, Tom, and thanks for having me.
It's great to have you and Tony Trischka on the same show. We are really honored. Your thoughts on Earl Scruggs as another great banjo player yourself, Ron, and his passing.
You know, I don't know if you can really put a value on it to all the banjo players in the world. If it weren't for Earl Scruggs, I don't know if any of us would be playing the three-finger style of banjo. I know how influential Earl was on my playing and will be forever. And, you know, there were some three-finger players before Earl, but he sure took it to a place where no one had gone, and in my opinion, still no one has gone where Earl Scruggs has gone.
Yeah, it's really something special. Tony, we've got sound here of you and Earl playing. This was 2007, so not long ago, and he was up there. But with this song is Ivory Toad of Catalan. This is off your album Double Banjo Bluegrass Spectacular. We'll listen in just a second, but set this up for us, Tony. How was Earl doing when you played this?
Well, actually, that tune is with Bela Fleck. I think the one that you want is Farewell Blues, which is the first cut on the CD.
Oh, I don't know if I've got that set up here. Doggone it. And I wanted to have it. I wanted to hear you and Earl. Well, I'm not sure we've got that one right here right now. But tell us about playing with him. When in 2007, he was well into his 80s.
He was in his early 80s. And first of all, I was obviously thrilled that he would play on my album, if I could have thought when I was a kid, someday Earl Scruggs will play on your album. What? And so we're sitting knee to knee, kind of running the tune down in the studio. And on one level, it's Earl, you know, because I knew him and it's kind of a casual thing and he's such a laid-back guy. But then I'm sitting knee to knee with Earl Scruggs. Jeez. And the thing that really knocked me out was how powerful his sound was. You know, he's like 81, 82 years old. And I was like, whoa, it was just this big sound coming out. He was hitting it hard, too.
That's great.
And, you know, you would, because he wasn't frail, but, you know, he was pretty, you know, he was getting up there and he still could knock it down.
We'll see if we can pull that one up. I do have, I'm sorry, this is not from that album, but this is from 2003. This is Pick Along from Three Pickers. And here he's teamed up with fellow bluegrass legends Doc Watson and Ricky Skaggs, the song Pick Along.
This is one of your tunes, isn't it, Earl?
Yeah, it is.
It's called Pick Along. All right, Earl.
Thank you.
dogs there in 2003. Let's go to Eric in Starksboro, Vermont. Eric, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. You had mentioned earlier the referenced the festival culture of bluegrass, and our family tries every summer to attend the Gray Fox Bluegrass Festival, which is in New York State, which is a wonderful bluegrass festival. I believe Tony has been there a few times as well. And a few years ago, I think it was around 2006, we saw Earl and his band play, and they were on stage. And while they were on stage, a thunderstorm blew in with lots of lightning, lots of wind and rain and thunder, and forced the band off the stage, which was a disappointment to everybody there.
Sure.
But so the stage was quiet for a few minutes, but then Earl and his band started playing backstage behind the stage and broadcasting over the speakers into the audience. He
great.
Just wanted to play so much that they just kept on playing despite the weather, and I just thought that was great, showing how much he just really loved to play and wanted to play for folks.
That's a great story. Never mind the wind and rain, even from backstage, they'll keep it coming to you. Eric, thanks for that. One more here from Albany, New York. Pat, you're on the air with Tony Trischka, Ron Stewart, and we're remembering Earl Scruggs.
Hi, Tom. I remember in 1965, I was one of the organizers of a winter carnival at universities. All the universities in Halifax got together and had one huge winter carnival.
Yeah.
We had Louis Armstrong, Flatt and Scruggs, and the Clancy Brothers.
Wow.
On successive nights. And I remember Louis Armstrong was very upset because he found out that Flatt and Scruggs were playing the next night, and he was upset that nobody had told him in advance because he wanted to stay over and watch them play. Unfortunately, had another booking. Another interesting part of that was there was also an inter-university talent show featuring local talent, and there were two people who were influenced by the Flatt and Scruggs performance. One of them was Ann Murray, who went on to have a very successful recording career, and Brian Ahern, who was became a top producer in Nashville.
Sure, sure. Wow. And Louis Armstrong, who wished he was there to hear all that. No small performer himself at all. Pat, thanks. And one more, Cookeville, Tennessee. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was really sad about, hearing about Earl Scruggs dying, but just all the great music this man played and all the people he played with. I listened to one of his albums last night I got. It's Earl Scruggs with his family and friends, with Dylan, the Byrds, and Gil Trythall, the Morris Brothers, Joan Baez.
Mm.
And after listening to that, well, I had to listen to John Hartford for a little while. But now that Ron and Tony, now you guys, there's going to be young kids growing up and listening to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys are carrying the ball now. And it's a big ball to carry, but I think you guys will do a good job doing it.
That's great, Jerry. I appreciate your call. I mean, Tony, how does that feel to be carrying that ball that Earl Scruggs leaves on the field? Now it's for you and Ron.
Well, it's, I don't think about it that way personally. Mm-hmm. I'm just doing what I'm doing. And, of course, no one can really carry on what Earl did. But it's, as Ron was saying, it's in our fingers. Like last night after I heard about it, I just started playing Earl Scruggs tunes. And I know a whole bunch of them. And it just like – that's just what comes out of my fingers, even though I've done my own thing and wrote my own tunes and, stretched things in certain directions. At the base of it, it's all Earl. And I teach, and so I'm always teaching people Earl,
mm-hmm.
Earl things. And his music is so subtle that even this morning driving into New York, I was listening to some things from the 50s and I was catching things I'd never heard before. It's like the thing about Earl Scruggs' style is anyone can pick it up. Almost in one or two lessons, you can be playing something like Boil 'em Cabbage Down or Cripple Creek.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can spend the rest of your life really trying to get it down, and you'll never get there. I've been playing for 48 years, and I'm still trying to get that sound.
Is there something you might play for us now from Earl with your banjo right there, Tony?
Sure. I'll play a little bit of Nashville Skyline Rag, which is just kind of putting the Bob Dylan spin on things here.
That one goes out to Mr. Earl Scruggs. That's just great. Nashville Skyline Rag. Gosh, that is just terrific. Did he give you pointers when you'd sit with him, Tony? Did he? I don't know. You've been playing a long time too. Maybe you were sharing pointers.
No. You know, it's funny because he would just play and you would pick stuff up. Bela Fleck and I went over to his house, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, and got a banjo in his hands, and he just started playing without picks on. Played this tune called "Farewell Blues," just the beginning of it. Sorry. That tune. And he just did this fingering thing, and I played the tune for, again, 45 years or something at that point. And he did this fingering thing that was much more economical that I'd never seen him play it before. I went, oh, that's how he does it.
I've got the
and
sound.
I've been doing it ever since.
I've got the sound of that now. This is you, Tony Trischka, and Earl Scruggs. This is 2007, the song "Farewell Blues" off the album Double Banjo Bluegrass Spectacular. Guest Tony Trischka there with Earl Scruggs, 2007, not so many years ago. Let's go to Jeff in Plattsburgh, New York. Jeff, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to know if everybody remembers an old album from Flatt and Scruggs called Nashville Airplane. I think it came out in the early 70s. And it had songs on it like The Universal Soldier and The Times They're Changing. And it was it seemed pretty radical for what country music was back then, and it really, really excited me and my brothers. And I just wanted to know if you all remembered it.
An anti-war flavor to that album you're remembering, Joe.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Tony?
Oh, I sure remember that. It's funny because I think a lot of that direction was due to Louise Scruggs because she was just always trying to see where's the next thing. And Flatt and Scruggs played at the Avalon Ballroom, maybe on the same bill with Miles Davis in the later 60s. They broke up, I believe it was early 69, late 68. But in fact, you've never lived until you've heard Lester Flatt sing Everybody Must Get Stoned, Bob Dylan's Rainy Day Women 12 and 35. And I'm not sure Lester was way into it, but he did it. And then it's interesting because as soon as they broke up, Lester went off on his own and did a straight-ahead bluegrass album doing things like Little Maggie.
Right.
And another song called You Can't Tell the Boys from the Girls. And friends, it's really messing up my world. They all wear long hair and bouncy curls, and I can't tell the boys from the girls. Earl, on the other hand, let his hair grow long, had a peace sign on his banjo strap.
Yeah.
And I think the first album he did after he broke up with Lester was called Nashville Rock. And on the back cover, he's standing with a stack of Fender amps behind him and doing things like Hey Jude and some other tunes. So there was definitely a divide as they went on their own particular ways.
And Earl Scruggs, of course, wide open to playing all kinds. Here's Country Comfort. This is written, of course, Elton John song, the Earl Scruggs review. Started playing together around 1972. Country rock, bluegrass, blues. Here's their take on Elton John's Country Comfort. Ron Stewart, you won the International Bluegrass Music Award Banjo Player of the Year Award just last year. Do banjo players still have that freedom? Do they feel that range now to move across boundaries like Earl did?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people consider Earl a ranked traditionalist, a lot of banjo players, but, you know, Earl was blazing a new path, even back with the Bluegrass Boys in the 40s. If you looked at what was around them at the time, they were way out there. And I think banjo players today are doing it too. And you have to play the music, you know, fit whoever you're playing with. And I think Earl did that masterfully. And speaking for myself and others and Tony and everyone else, you have to, A, go where your heart is, and B, play music that's suitable, you know, to what's around you, whatever that situation may be. So, sure.
It's great to know a kind of legacy right there in that freedom and that range, that adaptability and openness of Earl Scruggs. Ron Stewart, it's been great to have you with us today, looking back on this music, and just an honor to have you with us as such a fine banjo player yourself, as we remember Earl Scruggs, there in Russell Springs, Kentucky. Thank you so much for joining us, Ron.
Thanks so much, Tom. My pleasure.
And Tony Trischka, last thoughts on Earl Scruggs as we say goodbye to the great guy today, the great man.
Well, I just think it's rare to find one person that defines a whole style of playing. Like when you play the guitar, you can talk about Charlie Christian, Bernie Kessel, Eric Clapton, Doc Watson. When you talk about banjo, I mean, there are some other ways to do it, but it's Earl Scruggs. It's one man,
yeah,
who has influenced hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people.
Well,
his
great
legacy
influence
will live on forever.
Well, and with all that energy that just gets us going. Tony Trischka, it's been an honor to have you with us, and terrific to have you and your banjo, too. Thank you so much for joining us today as we give a send-off to Mr. Scruggs. Thanks for joining us, Tony.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Tony Scruggs, just a tip-top of the banjo-playing world. We'll go out with Foggy Mountain Breakdown. This was re-recorded in 2001, won Earl Scruggs' second Grammy in 2002. Here he is with Steve Martin, Vince Gill, Albert Lee, Paul Schaefer on piano, Leon Russell on organ, Marty Stewart on mandolin. Foggy Mountain Breakdown. And goodbye to Earl Scruggs. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.